Hello, friends. It's Terry McDougall with Marketing Mambo. Welcome to another exciting episode. My guest today is Janine McLaughlin. She is the founder and CEO of JMAC Consulting, and she previously worked for the American Dental Association in marketing. She also has a background in journalism, and she brings a lot of insights for how to get a message across effectively, how to influence people, which within marketing, we know that's the name of the game. So stay tuned for a very exciting and insightful discussion with my friend, Janine McLaughlin. And I hope that you really love this episode. I hope you get a lot out of it. And if you do, please do me a favor, go to whatever platform you use, whether it's iTunes, Spotify, whatever, and please review Marketing Mambo and also subscribe and share it with your friends. I love the conversations that I have with my brilliant guests, and I want to make sure that their thought leadership, their insights, the lessons they have to share, gets out to as many people as possible, and you can be a big part of that. So please do it today. So now, without further ado, let the Mambo begin. Welcome to Marketing Mambo with your host, Terry McDougall. It's the fun and fast podcast where we cha-cha chat with marketing movers and shakers from around the globe. Hi, everybody. It's Terry McDougall with Marketing Mambo. And today's guest, Janine McLaughlin, and I met when we were both board members at Elevate Network, a women's networking group. And with us both being marketers, we gravitated towards each other and basically spoke the same language. So when I invited Janine to be a guest on Marketing Mambo, it was because she'd been a longtime marketer within the association world. And me having worked in for-profit for my entire career, I was curious about the differences. As I have prepped for this call and read over Janine's bio, I can guarantee you listeners are in for a treat today. Janine is a multifaceted marketing and PR expert down to her DNA. She helps transform organizations by helping professionals get their ideas heard, and we all could use that. She has a passion for being innovative and creative in how we approach work and life, which, as you all know, that is my mission, to help people be happier at work and in their life. So Janine contributes content to Forbes, and she also coaches at 1871, which is Chicago's hub for digital startups. She's co-president of the Chicago chapter of Elevate Network, and she also is an activator with SHEEO, a global community investing in women entrepreneurs working on the world's to-do list. And as we all know, if you want to get stuff done, give it to a busy woman. So Janine's most recent employer was the American Dental Association, and she now has her own consulting business. So Janine, I want to welcome you to Marketing Mambo.
Terry, thank you so much. It is a delight to be here with you and to help your listeners be more creative, more innovative, and get their ideas heard.
Yeah. So Janine, definitely add any color to what I did to introduce you there, because you do have a very deep and impressive background. But to get us started, tell me how you got into marketing.
Fascinating. So way back when I was a wee lass, I loved writing and reading, and I'm still a total bookworm. So when I went to university, I studied journalism and was attracted to the PR communications angle of things, because you really needed to be a solid writer. And again, way back when, I wanted to talk about how can I help an organization by getting their messages out. And for a long time, in fact, my position at the ADA was my first non-agency job. So I'm really an agency animal from way back. I worked at places like Ogilvy, Edelman, on clients that included Procter & Gamble. I did a lot in the food category. So Land O'Lakes butter, Sargento cheese, Quaker oats, all of that. Although Quaker oats was kind of the beginning of my foray into health. So Quaker oats had a heart health positioning. If you know that oatmeal can reduce your cholesterol and protect against heart disease, that's probably because of the work that my team did. And when we talk about marketing, one of the most important things to think about are those metrics. How are you going to measure those results? And one of the things I was most proud of is my team helped drive sales for Quaker Oats because they had research that showed that their advertising was not really delivering what it needed to. And so they attributed the results to the PR program that was to help people understand that if you eat a generous bowl of oatmeal every day for a month, you get the threshold, and to keep on going, it can help protect against heart disease. So that was a great message to be able to deliver because I felt like I was really helping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so funny. I think about like when I was a little kid that my mom would make me oatmeal, and that was before they came with like the cinnamon and sugar in it and stuff like that. You can definitely see how something that an older established product like that might need a refresh, and especially when it's healthy, right? To give people a reason to eat oatmeal again.
Exactly. So again, the data says a lot. So 65% of people have it in their pantry. So It's in there. What do we need to do to get them to take it out of the cupboard and have it for breakfast? And there are lots of barriers and triggers that we talk about, you know, so a lot of people love oatmeal. Some people need to understand that maybe some cranberries on top might add a little zip to it. So you'll enjoy it and you won't think that it's kind of nondescript, if you will. That was one of the barriers. So when you look at what's going to resonate. So again, when you talk about knowing your audience, knowing what's going to motivate them, when we looked at one of the barriers was flavor, we had a campaign where we worked with chefs who went on television to demonstrate, here's how you can have a healthy breakfast and boy, does it taste good. So there was that enhanced credibility because, you know, if chefs are eating oatmeal, maybe I should try it too. And that was a balance to the heart health part, because if I think that I should eat it, maybe I won't be as motivated as when I think, oh, this sounds interesting. Let me try that. It's like a double benefit of health plus taste.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm seeing a theme here with your career that I wasn't aware of when we knew each other in that previous context. I guess the memory that stands out for me most with you is how when we were at the board meetings and we'd be introducing ourselves to new members, that you'd say, oh, I'm Janine, I'm with the American Dental Association, and remember to floss.
It's always nice to have a memorable tag, isn't it? Now we need a new tagline. And what's interesting is, again, getting to know the audience. One of the things that the ADA said when they first hired me is, we love your consumer experience. We want you to help us help people be more healthy, because very often today, many people think of dentistry as whitening and straightening. Everyone wants this beautiful smile, but really there are devastating consequences for not having a healthy mouth. And flossing is one of the things that you can do every day that's going to help you be healthier. And so that was just kind of a fun thing. I would meet people at parties or things like that, and I would tell them where I work, and you know, suddenly their hand would go up and they would say, oh, I didn't floss very well today. I didn't know I would meet anyone that was in dentistry. So it is kind of interesting. And I had a lot of volunteer dentist advisors, and they had all these stories about people would say, hey, doc, there's this, you know, and they'd point in their mouth and open, but they were, you know, out in public. And so it's kind of a challenge for the dentist to say, you know, I'd be happy to treat you and you'll need to make an appointment at the office.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so funny. Well, that's kind of a good segue for us to talk about, you worked in the agency world and you worked for all of these for-profit, some of the biggest brands, literally household brands, but going to a professional association, how is marketing within a professional association different than marketing for-profit businesses? And maybe, I'm sure that there's a lot of things that are the same as well. So can you speak to that?
Sure. A lot in common, but the main difference is I had one client. So in the agency world, people who are in the agency business know that very oftentimes everything happens at the same time, or there are certain times where you're just flat out, or sometimes it feels like you're flat out all the time. Now, at an association, there's still pretty much of a clip, but with the one client, you know that, okay, there's a lot of news happening around the annual meeting when key health papers or scientific studies are coming out. There are different times of the year where it's going to be a certain kind of focus and then other focus at another type of the year. So for example, one of the things that when you're thinking about dentistry, if we're marketing to consumers, you want to use your benefits before they expire at the end of the year. So there are a lot of appointments made at the end of the year. There are many school systems that require a dental visit before school starts. So July, August is busy. You might not know that there is mouth guard month, and that is to help people understand that mostly for children, but you know, if adults play hockey or some other sort of, particularly with children, because even soccer, which is not really a contact sport or isn't intended to be, kids have accidents. And so we want to educate parents to make sure your children are playing sports with a mouth guard. There are different things in terms of the mm-hmm. cycle as to when that happens.
Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like a lot of the messaging is focused at the general public, but how was it working with your members within the association?
You know, it was both. So we have a strong presence with marketing to people to help them be mouth healthy. Mouth Healthy is the ADA's consumer website, but also marketing to members. So you always want members to know that you have their back, that you are supporting them in a way that they need support. So for example, a year ago, when the COVID lockdown started, many states recommended that dental practices close. There were things like the availability of PPE, which is personal protective equipment. Those are the masks, gloves, face shields, things that dentists and their teams wear. So there was an expected shortage of that. So we needed to help members when we're ready to open again. How do I access the PPE so that I can treat my patients safely? How do I educate patients about when it's safe to come back to the office? And then the ADA, as many large associations do, has a strong relationship with the CDC. So we had regular meetings with the CDC to talk about, what do we know about this virus? What do we know about the science behind it and how the science is evolving and things like that? And so we could release that scientific information. So the ADA, as other groups did, had a special page devoted to COVID. Now, in regular times, if we're ever going to have regular times again, there are things like, how do I run a robust practice? How do I market to patients? How do I provide patient information? How do I access the things that I need to run a successful practice? And then the other side is clinical excellence. How do I get that scientific information so that I am on top of the evolving science so that I am treating my patients with the most up-to-date information, up-to-date materials, et cetera?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting hearing you talk about the role of the association, because certainly I see a lot of parallels with marketing within a for-profit, where your role is to build that bridge with the consumers that are using the service. Even though you're not in marketing for a particular practice, you're promoting the importance of healthy mouth care, I suppose.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, helping and supporting those members. And I would imagine that that's sort of another aspect of marketing that you have to take into consideration, is just making sure that the members are pleased so that they continue to be members.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's interesting, because one of the things that we would say is an educated consumer is a good user of dental services, if we want to be frank about that. And one of the things that we looked at one point was back in the recession of 08, and actually a little bit before that, dental visits started to decline. So in the recession, some people lost their benefits. We didn't delve into why they stopped going to the dentist, but our research arm suspected that I lost my benefits, I lost my job, I didn't go for 2 years. And then 2 years later, I went back And nothing was wrong. So now I'll just go every 2 years. And the issue with that is that sometimes there's something going on underneath that if you catch it early, you're going to avoid expensive and painful treatment. And so we encourage people to ask their dentist, work with their dentist about how frequently you should go to the dentist. The 2 times a year is typically based on that's what the dental benefit covers. It's not necessarily because some people might be young and healthy. They might need to go every 18 months. Other people, I had a colleague who said, my mouth is a tartar factory. I have to go 3 times a year. Mm-hmm. So because they needed to stay out in front of any problems. And so yes, the idea of marketing dentistry so that people go to the dentist is key. And in addition, helping those members understand that this is what we're doing for you. We lobby in Washington. We, again, educate consumers. We offer you these benefits that are part of your membership. One of the things that the ADA has done is negotiate. So for example, again, back to COVID, the ADA was able to distribute masks to all dentists, not just members, free of charge, because they were able to get a relationship within the supply chain where they were able to obtain those materials. And also work with Washington to show that dentistry is an essential service and therefore should be at the front of the line in terms of ability to purchase these things. And so there are things that you don't really think about that, you know, but of course you don't want to go to a dentist and not be treated safely. You know, one of the things that we do know is dentists understand infection control better than anyone. So there are expectations that if a patient goes to the dentist, that they're going to be safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went at the end of last year. And it was one of those things where it was a little nerve wracking, right? You know, it's time to go, it's past time to go. But it was funny going in because it was almost like hazmat suits, right?
Sure, sure. In the waiting room, they remove the chairs. And, you know, going to pick up a magazine at the dentist office is not going to happen probably ever again. So, you know, you'll need to bring your own reading materials.
Well, we've got it with the phone, right?
Yeah, exactly. Your phone, your iPad, you know, but you got to be prepared. And I've seen dental offices where they have a little table with games for kids or, you know, checkers or things like that. Nope, those are gone. So it's just interesting to look at what's going on.
Yeah, I remember walking in and I think I was in the door about 6 inches and then the receptionist had the forehead thermometer. But that was very reassuring to know that they were taking it so seriously. But anyway, I'd like to shift gears. That was fascinating. And thank you, because I call myself a marketing nerd. And I'm always like curious about how marketing works in different industries and different sectors of the economy. So I really appreciate you providing that perspective. You mentioned earlier that you studied journalism, and I know that you've been a contributor to Forbes. And I understand that you wrote an article, which I think a lot of us could get benefit from, 3 strategies for getting heard, I think.
Yeah, sure.
Many of us want to be heard. And, you know, a lot of times people are talking over us or we say what we want to say and we don't get the response that we expect.
Absolutely. So that article evolved into what I call my Say It Shorter workshop. So we go through all these. And so what I help people break down is the idea of what do you say? And how do you say it? So the what do you say part has to do with thinking through and formulating ideas. You know, we've talked before about sometimes people have an idea in their head and they talk it through while they're in a meeting and it gets very distracting because it's an unformulated idea. And so what I help people understand is that you can test that idea by trying it out in different levels of what I call escalating risk. So first, you test your idea with your friend, your walking partner or relative, and you say, hey, I've got this idea. Let me tell you about it. And then reflect back to me, you know, do you understand? That way they'll filter out, you know, are you using jargon? Is it too complicated? How do you say it simply? Then the next phase is to test it with a former colleague or a trusted colleague at work and say, hey, I've been thinking about presenting this. Let me tell you what the idea is and tell me what you think. Same feedback loop. In marketing, there's a thing called a feedback loop where you put something out there, you get feedback, you learn from it, and then you do the next thing. So then after that, you're ready to talk to your boss. You might have a one-page visual. I encourage people to see how you can you make it into an infographic, even if it's stick figures that will help you illustrate it and help it be more understandable. And then when you're explaining it, you start with your headline. This is a journalism device called the inverted pyramid. And what's fun about that is the inverted pyramid started when there were typeset newspapers, because the manual typesetter would put the story in, and then when they ran out of paper, the story ended. So if your most important part is at the end, you're dead. I find a lot of engineers, scientists, medical people, they want to set things up and then give you the thesis sentence. You need to start with your thesis and then give your supporting points and then have a call to action at the end. So maybe your call to action is, I invite you to remember this when you're voting for this legislation. I invite you to take this action or just be aware of this. So that's the signal. Okay, my idea is finished. Like headline, 3 points, no more than 3 points. I used to have clients and I was with the agencies where they would say, Janine, these are the 25 points we want in every interview. And now we know the brain will not absorb more than 3 points. So get it to your three. You'll need to leave the rest for when someone's going to want to delve into more information. So the next part is how you say it. How do you present this information? And this might be you're making a speech. This might be you're in an interview where I do a lot of media training for executives and spokespersons. So they need to be really tight with their messages. Or it might be you're presenting to your boss, you're presenting to a team. And so what you want to do is you've got your idea formulated, you've got your presentation formatted tight and bright, and now you're going to present it. And so what you want to do is look at how can you do it with energy, enthusiasm, particularly on Zoom. You need to compete with everyone's dog and their phones, and you really need to be engaging. And then also look at your delivery style. Are you an ummer? I see a lot of people, both women and men, where they finish a sentence like it's a question. And a lot of that can be, okay, I'm seeing if you're checking with me. And so that's a key coaching point, which is unless you're asking a question, any declarative sentence needs to go down at the end or at least stay level. And so you want to just avoid the distractions so that people can focus on your idea, not the 50 ums. And one of the things that I tell people is get a partner, have a buddy when you're in a meeting and have them give you feedback on your delivery style. And I did this with a guy at work once, and within 2 minutes, he said 50 times. And we were able to identify that when he knew what he wanted to say, he said it very powerfully. When he was thinking about it, so again, it's an off-the-cuff thing. It's a mental space filler because your brain is going faster than your mouth. So your mouth fills in with an or sometimes you're in a culture where interrupting is common. And that's a separate issue that should be addressed as far as team dynamics. But sometimes people say because they're not finished with their thought and they don't want to be interrupted. So they say because they're thinking of the next thing. So it's fascinating.
Yeah. Well, what I got out of that was don't bury the lead and plan for your messaging. You know, it's interesting hearing you talk about this because I will tie this back to some of the things that I've seen in coaching is that when people are trying to influence within organizations and anytime that we're trying to communicate, we are trying to influence people to Absolutely. Take a particular action or have a particular thought that often we don't really plan for that. We just say, oh, I've got an idea and I'm going to go out and share the idea and people are going to see the brilliance of it and they're going to jump on board immediately.
Right.
And we really do have to stop and step back and say, what is it that they need in order to accept what it is? What are some of the areas of potential resistance and how do I overcome those? And how do I lay the groundwork or prepare the bed for the seeds I'm planting to blossom instead of just dropping them on dry ground wherever and just walking away?
You are so right on that. And that's part of what you can do. When I talked about the feedback loop earlier, you can do what's called socializing around the organization. So either key people who will be the decision makers about your idea or people on their teams, you could test your idea out with someone who's on a team of Sally Smith, who is the decision maker here. And you can say, what do you think the barriers to this idea would be for Sally? What should I prepare for? And that way, when you're in the meeting, you can also say, here's my idea. I'm ready for your questions. And then you can say, while people are thinking about their questions, because sometimes people don't jump in. Sometimes they're interrupting you and they're really ready to jump in. Other times they're still processing things and are not quite clear. Then you can say, well, one of the questions that I've heard when I was working with this idea is X. And if you're thinking about X, here's what you might want to be mindful of with that as well. So the other preparation point is to think about What are the questions, including what are the tough questions that I don't want to answer? And be ready for those tough questions, because those questions are going to...
Yeah, well, those are the areas where people are going to have resistance. And unfortunately, sometimes if you don't address those, everybody may be nodding in the meeting, and then they walk out of the meeting and have a lot of sidebars. And then the next thing you know, the thing that you thought was a home run, all of a sudden is a non-starter.
Sure. And sometimes it's great to lay that pipe in advance, where you can create some allies by either having the relationships with them and also educating them about this idea and what you think the benefits are, because organizations are very complicated. And I've known that throughout marketing, a lot of times your marketing skill is most used by marketing within your organization.
Totally agree.
Yeah. And so what you need to do is, what needs to happen to get a yes on this? And what do you need to make that happen?
Yeah, it's clear that you're a master at influencing, Janine. And I don't know if you've ever heard of the ADKAR model of change. Have you heard of that?
No, tell me.
Well, ADKAR is an acronym, and it stands for awareness, desire, knowledge, ability, and reinforcement. One of my clients introduced me to this. He was a change management consultant, and I was fascinated to actually have a framework to look at that aligned with intuitively what I had been doing for years, which is, when you run into resistance, it's because somebody hasn't past one of these gates. If someone's not aware that change needs to happen, or isn't aware that going to the dentist is going to help them maintain a healthy mouth, they're not going to do that. They might be aware of it, but they don't want to do it. So, okay, how do you impact desire? Or they know that they want to do it, but they don't know where the local dentist is, or they don't, they don't know how to, you know, get low-cost dental care or whatever. So when you use that, it gives you a lens to look through to understand, like, where is it that we're getting hung up here? And I think a lot of the strategies that you were talking about are laying the pipe to be able to address. You're looking down the path and saying, well, I could see where this might be an issue. So I'm going to go ahead and lay the foundation so that we don't have to run into that resistance.
Yeah, just smoothing that runway can go very far in getting you the results you want.
Sure. So when we were talking before I hit record, that you have an approach or philosophy on marketing that I thought was really beautiful and actually aligns very well with what we've been talking about in terms of Say It Shorter. So sure. I'd like for you to share the four I's approach to marketing with the audience.
Yeah, this is the Janine four I's. It's something that I've used, and it's one of the things that I think about in terms of how do you make things memorable and understandable. So I love the ADKAR model. I'm definitely going to look into that. So the four I's take from start to finish. And again, then you loop around. So the first is insight. So that is understanding of your audience to know what motivates them. What do they need, want, or wish? How can you help them? And that might be, as we were talking, maybe your audience is your boss. Maybe your audience is overall consumers. If you're a manufacturer, maybe your audience is the larger manufacturer that needs your widget or your medical device or your part. So get insights into that audience. A deep understanding is going to inform everything. Then the ideas. So the World Economic Forum, LinkedIn, Forbes, everyone says that creativity is one of the necessary skills for jobs of the future. From a mercenary standpoint, it can't really be automated. You know, we've got our artificial intelligence, and it's just not the same. So you need to be able to get those creative ideas, that fresh thinking in there. Then you follow it along to innovation. So sometimes people ask me, what's the difference between creativity and innovation? Innovation is making those ideas actionable. How can you create a prototype? How can you be into something, either a product or a service or philosophy or whatever, that's going to be actionable and have a business benefit? And then the fourth I is impact. How do you measure those results? How do you make that impact? Have you helped that audience? So when we look at Stephen Covey, begin with the end in mind. When you have got to know that audience, you don't want to go in saying, I want to do this product. We mentioned that I coach at 1871. I cannot tell you how many brilliant people who are so in love with their technology saying, I can do this, and so I'm going to make a product that does this. Not really understanding that either the product already exists and you don't necessarily have that idea that's going to make it better. You know, so you don't want to start with the product. You want to start with the audience. What do they need? How are you helping them? Are you helping them in a way that no one else is doing? And so again, you begin with the end in mind, then you generate those ideas. The idea of ideas, if you will, is you first want to start with a lot of ideas before you go narrower. It's called divergent and convergent thinking, if you look at design thinking or the way the professionals do it, which is divergent. You get a lot of different ideas that should be still within the framework of your strategy brief, not so much flying to the moon if your audience is moms who buy everything at the grocery store. There are different sorts of things. And then you do the convergent, because one of the barriers that I see a lot is people evaluate as they go. Oh, we tried that 5 years ago. It didn't work. Or we don't have the technology to make that happen. You know, maybe you don't have the technology yet. So look at that idea. If it's going to solve a problem, maybe there's a way you can accelerate that. And then again, onto that innovation and the impact. And then you go back again. So you want to, the other thing that is essential these days is not just executing an entire initiative and then evaluating. You need to look at how are you doing. Digital technology has made this fantastic. So you can evaluate digital ads after they've been out for 2 weeks, which are engaging, which are not, you know, what you can dial up, what you can dial down. Are people choosing your keywords that you thought would resonate with them? There are all kinds of tools to be able to evaluate as you go along, before you get to the end. And again, look at that impact. And then see, is your audience, have you made that emotional connection with the audience to get the results you want?
Yeah. You know, I'm hearing a lot of people talk about using agile methodology in marketing. Mm-hmm. When typically we've heard of agile being used in software development and that sort of thing. And you also mentioned design thinking. And, you know, I actually had a guest on. She is a design thinking consultant. And part of the reason why I wanted to have her on is because I feel like what marketers have done forever, like you talked about that feedback loop, we've been doing that forever. I think that we're around the same age. And I started in the pre-digital times, right? And we had feedback loops back then because, you know, your desire is to have impact. And if you're just making stuff up and throwing it out there and you're not paying any attention to the impact that it's having and using that to optimize, and then obviously you're not going to be a marketer for very long.
Sure. You know, I love when I hear this about design thinking, because it's a precept that has been around for a long time. So again, I worked on Procter & Gamble. So now with design thinking, there are other tools, but Procter & Gamble would do in-home visits where they make an appointment, go to someone's house, say, can you show me what's in your refrigerator? Watch people make things or watch people do their laundry. And sometimes the insights are really amazing. So I talked to someone who was with P&G internationally, and they had a team go to a country that had mostly very rural populations, and people were doing their laundry by hand. And the result is that their hands were getting very chapped and rough because, you know, got all the dirt out, but it was also very damaging. And so they took a look at how do we reformulate to serve this customer who is probably not going to have an electric washing machine for a very long time because their communities didn't have that. And so it's just interesting to look at how you can understand the needs and wants of your customer to find out what is it that they need. And being there in person is really, we talk about, again, a marketing term, qualitative and quantitative research, where the quantitative is the survey devices and other things where you can get a large body of information, but then the qualitative, where it's just by talking to people that you elicit that feedback and that input. And there's a real talent to that too. So again, it goes back to design thinking, where you don't go out to validate your premise, you go to find out more. So the key words there are, tell me more about that and tell me how that impacts you and things like that.
Yeah, I've been on the other side of that mirrored glass many times. And it is really surprising sometimes when you go in and you think you know what the results are going to be, or you're curious and something comes up in those focus group discussions that blows your mind. And you're like, wow, I never thought about that. And obviously, I mean, we all have our own perspectives and we don't always share the exact perspective of the people that we're trying to influence. And so it is really important to ask them and to start to see things from their perspective if we want to have that trusting relationship with them as a provider. So this has been a fascinating discussion, and you have been a wonderful guest. I would welcome you back in the future.
Thank you. Happy to.
Yeah. I want to ask you, what are you up to now? And I saw you're doing consulting, JMAC consulting or something.
Yes.
Like that.
You know, it's
from one Mac to another.
Well, and it's interesting because that first started way before the JLo times, where there were several of us with JM as our initials. And so when people were doing shorthand and memos and things like that, then I was JMAC. So, yes. So I do marketing consulting. I also do what I mentioned, the Say It Shorter workshops. I do executive training and creative facilitation. So I have a workshop, I call it Bring the Bright, how to infuse fresh thinking into your team. And so that sometimes is, here's how you do it training session, or sometimes I do the facilitation to get those ideas out, you know, when I talked about with the divergent and convergent thinking, to help get a plan together for a team. That's what I'm up to now. My website is JeanineMcLaughlin.com. I also welcome people reaching out to me on LinkedIn. I love hearing what other people are up to. And I think LinkedIn is a great network where people share their information and the wonderful work that they're doing. So look forward to hearing from your audience.
And I see you're on Clubhouse too. I'm on Clubhouse too, but I haven't really done much out there yet. Have you used it?
I have. And it's so interesting. So I love the collegiality. What I'm finding myself trying to figure out is how to curate, because there is so much and so many, even so many languages. So just navigating the English language, what I find interesting is when I check in at different times, in some cases early in the morning, there's a lot of buzz going on in the UK, and then later in the evening, it's Australia. So even within the English speaking world, the gamut of information and philosophies is really interesting to participate in.
Well, Jeanine, thank you so much for being with us today. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you, Terry. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Marketing Mambo. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe, like, and share. I'd love to hear from you. Check out the show notes for my social media and contact information. Until next time, adios.